Welcome back to the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. Before we have our presenters come up to answer questions, I'd like to remind our audience that the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs is holding a fundraising supper and evening here at Erickson's on Friday, March 31st. It's a feast with John Gilchrist. The title is Feasting, Hedonism, and Aphrodisiacs, Eating Our Way to Civilization. And tickets sell for $75 a piece. It's a good cause. I have them available, and other SACPA board members have them available. So if you're interested in coming and enjoying that fine feast, please get in touch with one of us after the session. All right, I'd like to bring back Thane Hurlburt and Stefan Mikulski. Remember, when you're asking a question, to identify yourself and to keep it to one question, please.
Thank you.
Is this on? Yes. My name is Henning Mundel, and I have a question to Stefan. But first, I just want to make a very quick comment on one of the benefits mentioned by Thane about the, for other parts of Alberta, the less over-acidification of soil might be of use. But in southern Alberta, where we're in this area right around Lethbridge, where we're dealing between 7 and almost 9 pH, I don't think that's a major concern, the over-acidification. Stefan, you mentioned about your voice and the plus minus 10 degrees. My question relates to much higher fluctuations in relation to the technology. And in my basic question is, why in southern Alberta haven't we seen biogas come into the fore 20, 30 years ago? I know the enabling legislation and so on is all very important, but my question relates to what I was just saying, the temperature. Do our winters or strong winters, is that even relevant at all?
No, it's not a technical thing at all. I mean, the temperatures here are a little bit lower in the peak than they are in Germany, that's for sure, or in Europe. But if you look at Sweden, Finland, they have biogas plants too. It's a similar climate. So it's not a technical issue at all. Technically, you're dealing with the cold by putting just a little bit more insulation on the tanks, for example, and putting probably pumps in-house versus being outside that they don't freeze and stuff. The reason that you haven't seen this here in Canada, from my perspective, is just strictly economic. I mean, power prices are still half of that you pay in Europe. It's the energy is strictly too simple, and the need to do something in waste management hasn't been really out here, I think, because population and the land mass, and that's the thing that drives the thing in Europe. So that's, to me, the reason you haven't seen it. And now everybody, the awareness is a little bit more out, and the things are starting to grow
a little bit.
Yeah.
Pat Brown. Now, I know Thane from Ducks Unlimited, so I know you are recognized as somebody interested in the environment. That's already a given. So why this location that you've chosen? Why have you chosen this location where I understand there is some reservation, or not in my backyard, as they say?
If you remember what Stefan was talking about, the economics to make a biogas plant economically viable in the marketplace in Alberta, you have a number of revenue streams in order to make it work. Because we still have lower energy costs, we still have what we can get paid for our electricity, so in order to make the economics work, we have to be able to sell the electricity, get some tipping fees, have the ability to produce some greenhouse gas credits in the future, but we have to be able to sell the thermal energy. The thermal energy is 50% of the total energy. So what is thermal energy? It's the heat from the generation of the electrical portion of it. So it's the internal combustion engines and the generators that create heat. We take that heat and heat water. Now you have this hot water. Hot water is pretty difficult to distribute, whether it's hot water or steam. So you have to be close enough to a large industrial type of consumer to make it work. So that location that we're talking about right there is very close to the Federal Research Center, which is a huge hot water consumer, very close to the Lethbridge Correctional Center that is a huge hot water consumer. So when you look around trying to find where are there large hot water consumers, there's only four or five of them in the Lethbridge area that can take all of the heat from this plant.
Thank you.
Jack Fleming, I live in Sunnyside Road, right by the plant where post plant is going to be. Saying in this regard that you're just talking about right now, if this was the only viable place for to use the thermal energy, and it's a demonstration plant, wouldn't it be better to try another formula so you'll not have to set these plants up just in places where you can sell the thermal energy, because that's of no benefit at all to us. That's only benefit to you and your investors. So why not work in conjunction with perhaps greenhouse operators or something like that, put the plant nearer the source, because it's not really a biogeneration plant. It's a waste management plant. And why would we want to truck all this thing into an urban area when you should be formulating a plan like that, because it is supposedly a demonstration plant that you want to build more of? Why not do it in that regard, somewhere else?
Thanks, Jack. It's the amount of energy. There's a huge greenhouse project going up north of Coaldale, east of Pitcher Butte now. Their total plan is to have 10 acres of greenhouse under glass. They still can't take all the thermal energy from this plant 12 months out of the year. So the economic viability of these types of plants is just right on the fence right now. And so as you're aware, Jack, we've been working with a group of landowners there to try and come up with some compromises to only locate the generation portion on that site and pipe the biogas in. This is something that we're looking at. In that case, anybody could go do that today because it's already zoned for generation. And you could run a natural gas line in and sell the thermal energy if you could make the arrangements to the federal or provincial government. So the demonstration portion of it, the word demonstration means one thing. That's demonstrating the economic viability. If we couldn't sell the thermal energy, then we're quite a few years away from building a plant. All of the different revenue streams have to fall into place, and you have to be over 2 megawatts two to at least 3 megawatts before there's enough of a revenue stream to make it viable.
Dwayne Pendergast, could either of you tell us how you would go about establishing greenhouse gas reduction credits for a project like this, perhaps a little bit of technical detail?
I was personally involved in one of the working groups that is set up to come up with some so-called quantification protocols to make these calculations easier, to really find out what credits can be generated from those plants. And the approach right now is that these protocols for the anaerobic digester pretty much split up into three parts. It's an agricultural part that deals with what are the emissions and what can you save in handling the manure in a facility versus the way of doing it right now. So there's open storage type of questions. You save quite a bit of N2O. In particular, the biggest amount of credits will be generated from those plants by replacing natural gas as a fuel. So you're creating biogas, which is supposed to be not releasing any additional CO2, because the process of growing the plants and all the biomass contains the CO2, and you just releasing the amount in the biogas plant that has been in there before. So it's no additional CO2 like in burning fossil fuel or natural gas. So that's the way it's looked at right now. And then there's a third part which goes back to agriculture. What implication has the application of this fertilizer from the plant versus raw manure, and there's some effect. That's the most tricky or difficult or most scientific part that is under discussion right now. So these are the three sources where you gain some credit in those type of an arrangement, and on the other hand, you have to deduct the energy you put in the process to make this all happen. So at the end of the day, there's a net positive greenhouse gas saving for those kinds of plants that has to be really calculated in detail, but that's really roughly, briefly, how it works.
Hi, guys. my name is John LaForest. I'm from South Country Treatment Center. My question is related to the risk management and the emergency planning of a plant of this size. recently in the McLean's magazine for this week, there's a little article on page 11 that talks about Elsa, Germany, where a tank burst and 240,000 liters of liquid pig manure covered this little village in 50 centimeter high slurry. And I know that with all the plants in Germany that this may be one incident. However, we're located, our facility is located directly next to your facility. So I want to know, how would we respond to a situation where a tank did burst, and what precautions should we take? Like run for the hills?
Thanks, John. One thing that really hasn't been made completely public yet is the fact that the location next to the South Country Treatment Center will not have any of these tanks next to it. This is an agreement we're working on with the group, the Community Preservation Action Group. And we've come to some great compromises, and we're working through them. And we're looking at locating just the cogeneration portion. So in other words, just electrical generation and piping the biogas in and putting the tanks and the anaerobic digestion at a different location. So that's the direction we're going now. So that answers that question about the bursting tank. Somewhat. The plant that did have the tanks burst was a brand new plant. We just heard about that one. That's the one that we got in the news. I'm assuming there was with the tank that burst. One of the tanks was filled, another one was just being tested, and they were steel tanks that were determined to be constructed wrong. I don't believe, we'd have to do some more research, but I don't believe the biogas had even started, it hadn't even started forming, they just started filling the tanks. So, I mean, typically what happens here when you build a tank of that size, you have to fill it and do your tests with water. That's what has to be done first, before you put any other substances in it. And, we're not building steel tanks in our plant. We're building concrete tanks. But it wouldn't matter if they were concrete or steel. As long as they're engineered and constructed properly, it should solve that issue. At the other site, at another site where we're going to have tanks, we have to have certain containments in place. We have to have our emergency preparedness and response plans in place. These all have to be done before Alberta Environment will issue us any permits. It's all part of the process that we're going through with our project right now. So all of those things are being developed as we go along.
Marilyn Fleming, I live out on Sunnyside South. Do you have existing contracts, or have you been negotiating with the research station or the jail, or are there any contracts in place to buy the thermal energy?
No, there are no contracts in place. There is a feasibility study underway right now that is co-funded by ourselves and Agricultural Canada. And there's a third party that's doing the study to determine if it's in Agricultural Canada's best interest to do this, to buy this thermal energy from the cogeneration portion of this plant.
Thank you, Thane. Ardell Harris, that was really interesting. As an avid composter and a frequent user of heifer dust, I can appreciate some of the things you have said. There seems to be a problem, and I'm wondering if you might elaborate a bit on this. You mentioned the grid. You don't own the electrical grid. Somebody else does. And how much of a bottleneck is this? It's not only for you people. I understand the wind energy is also running into this kind of a problem. Do you envision that this will change your access to that grid? Is it going to get better, or is it a real battle ahead of you?
Stefan's been doing most of the work on the grid, so
I was fighting the battle. Yeah, it's surely technically it's not a big issue. I mean, if you're out in the country and the next power line is miles away, you're running into technical difficulty. But the process we went through, it's timely, and the location we are proposing, there's a power line right next door, just across the street, so. I mean, if you really look at it, it should be really easy and quick, but it took about 5 months to get a response from Fortis, which are the owners of the lines out there. And, the costs for a large project like the one we are proposing might not be that bad, but if you are looking for a single farm operation, and with quite lower capital costs, it can be really significant, and it still can kill the whole thing.
My name is Eric Williams. President G.W. Bush, in his State of the Union speech about 6 weeks ago, confessed to America's addiction to oil. He then, as one of his solutions, proposed that they provide biogas from some types of grass. Since this has a low yield, is this a feasible project, or what other materials can you use, or must you use food products, for example? I mean, I think it's a terrible thing to grow soy and then make it into biogas. This seems to be regressive, but it has been proposed, I know.
Well, that's. I thought you were only allowed one question. first off, the grass you're talking about that U.S. President Bush was alluding to is a grass they call switchgrass. There's millions and millions of acres of switchgrass, which is a very hardy native growing grass in the U.S. Switchgrass happens to be one of the grasses that has the highest possible methane content, or the ability to extract the methane out of it through a biogas process. So there has been quite extensive work done in the U.S. to see on their millions of acres of switchgrass, if they actually harvested it, what would the cost be and how much energy could they get back out of it? So that's been something they've been talking about for 5 years since I've been working on this biogas thing. So that's a lot of potential for them down there. When it comes to, what was the other question? Oh, yeah. Other products. Oh, growing soy. Yeah, I was going to make a point and I lost it for a minute there. There are the European Union, all over all the European Union countries, they put legislation in that all farmers had to remove 10% of their land from food production. So they cannot raise cattle, they cannot grow crops, they cannot do anything on 10% of their land that goes into food production for the human food chain. So what did they do? They grow energy crops. Most of them grow corn, like we see around here. They silage it, like we see around here all over the place, and they feed biogas plants. And they make money. And they buy corn silage at 65 to 70 euro a ton and feed their biogas plants and make a dollar doing it because of the rates over there. So they've created an entire new farming industry in Europe by taking 10% of this of their land out of commission, and now there's a huge number of them that are growing specifically called energy crops, and that's what it is, silage.
Leonard Haney, Pitcher Butte farmer. previous to the onset of of Mad Cow, this area with its feedlots was having its dead animals all picked up. As soon as that happened, then the dead animals pretty well are buried on farms at this point. Would this situation that you're promoting be able to take dead animals?
What we talked about before, about all the different government agencies having to agree on things, that the answer is, hopefully, CFIA right now, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, has got a piece of draft legislation out there about how to deal with SRMs, the specified risk materials, the parts of the animals that are taken out when they go through the slaughtering process, and how to dispose of those. And, of course, we've all listened to it on the news. It's quite a bit different for UTM or OTM, under 30 months or over 30-month-old animals. According to the new legislation, if it goes through its draft, and there's a good chance it won't go through because they're in a big battle with the U.S., every downer in a feedlot would be considered 100% SRM. And if that's the case, then we have a huge problem, because we have nothing in place, we have no infrastructure in place to ever take care of that much SRM. But the other downside is, with that proposed legislation, is the farmers would still be able to dispose of it on their own land. So now we're creating a really future huge problem as more and more of these animals become buried and buried. We won't be talking about spreading manure on the surface for groundwater contamination. We'll be talking about dead animals buried for groundwater contamination. And so there is the CFIA, Alberta Environment, Alberta Agriculture, Canada Agriculture, you know, they're all working on this, but no one really thinks they're going to make any decisions until the U.S. makes their new feed ban decisions coming in the fall. And no one thinks that CFIA is going to make their final decisions till after the U.S. decisions are out. So it's all political. It's being bantered around now. But theoretically, the high pressure, high temperature hydrolysis process that we're proposing can, and we've seen it, there's a pilot project, pilot plant in Pinoca that you can put an entire animal into, bring it up to a certain temperature and pressure, and in 40 minutes it's liquid. It changes the molecular structure, and it prepares it perfectly for a biogas plant. So there is potentials. The part that people are a little fearsome of right now, without enough science in place to prove it, is known BSE-containing tissue. Does this temperature and pressure denature the prion enough to render it harmless? So these are all scientific questions that they're trying to answer right now.
My name is Pat Greenlee. Last year, we had a talk here by Kelly Prenevost, and he was talking about a biodiesel plant. Now, I'm confused about what the difference is and what the similarities are.
The similarities are both processes and both end products are derived from natural organic sources. The technical process is quite a bit different. And we are talking, on the biogas side of things, we are talking about extracting the gas, the methane, to use it for generation of electricity. What the biodiesel does is it's taking any kind of organic oil, vegetable oil, used oil, restaurant fat, all this kind of stuff, canola oil, soybean oil, everything you want, and this oil then will be, in a chemical process, be converted to a fuel that is really similar to the petrol diesel you drive in your truck or whatever. It's a different process. The linkage that Thane was mentioning is that the biodiesel has some byproducts that are very nice for the biogas process, and that can be somehow, and that they can somehow be linked together really efficiently.
John LaForest again. I don't know if my question was really answered before, but
in terms of the risk management and environmental protection and emergency response planning. However, my question is different right now. In Germany, or I believe in Europe, when they talk about specified risk materials or SRMs, they have banned the use of those in digesters. And yet here you want to use those in digesters. And my question to you is, if they've been doing it for 15 or 20 years, what right would you have to put this stuff in the digesters when they have decided it's not good?
In Europe, to take care of most pathogens, that the post-digested material coming out of a biogas plant has to go through 70 degrees Celsius period for 3 hours, or an hour and a half at 70. Yeah, 1 hour at 70 degrees, and that takes care of everything from category two and down. Two and three, yeah. So when you get into category one is the SRM. The highest temperature and pressure hydrolysis process that's working in Europe today is 135 degrees Celsius and 3 bar pressure, about 35, 36 PSI. That's the highest temperature and pressure that they have in the hydrolysis. And they're saying that's not good enough. The 180 PSI and, or 180 degrees Celsius and 12 bar pressure, about 180 PSI, now the scientists are saying that's probably good enough, but there has to be further testing done on it. So right now in Canada, you can grind up a dead animal and spread it out in your field without anything. So what we're saying is, if they're going to change the legislation to deal with the specified risk materials that are the most dangerous portions of it, then even in Europe, the other stuff would work in combination with the hydrolysis and the anaerobic digestion. Yes, it is true, anaerobic digestion on its own, this is definitely not allowed. But in Canada, they're saying in combination with this temperature and pressure of hydrolysis and anaerobic digestion, it could be allowed. There's nothing cast in stone, it's not done yet. That's just the CFIA is looking at it.
Just ask one more question. John LaForest again. In terms of the SRM, you're saying they're spreading it on fields or whatever, and that's a bad thing, you know. And then you talk about putting these in the digesters, and over in Europe they're saying that this is a bad thing. So two wrongs don't really make a right. You're telling me in regards to this is that they've been doing it over there for 15 or 20 years. They've had problems with BSE. It's quite known. They've stopped it in 2003. Now we want to do that here when they've experienced problems, and we want to follow through with what, and now you're telling me, well, the Canadian government's looking at it, but you've said in your materials, the Canadian government or the provincial government doesn't have... Anyways, my question is...
Yeah, question.
The question is, and it's back to my original question, what gives the right to have ECB do this here in Lethbridge Urban Fringe when they decided in a whole continent that it's not good?
John, as you're aware, we haven't been given the right to do this in the Lethbridge Urban Fringe. You know that full well. And what we have talked about is locating only the cogeneration portion in that specific site, which is already approved zoning. So in the European model, they have not tested this temperature and pressure. The scientists in Edinburgh that do most of the BSE testing, there's opinions from these scientists saying at this temperature and pressure, when they do all of their specific calculations, we believe that will give us a log reduction of 6 or whatever it is. So extrapolated out on numbers, you know, 99.99, however many 99s times, safe. but they won't say 100% until they actually go through a 2-year test, put known SRM products through this temperature and pressure, take the products that come out of it, infect mice, see if it grows, all of this kind of stuff. So, I mean, basically that's where that's at. There's no permits that allows us to use SRM, or any of this product. Everything is being developed as we come along. This is being developed at the same time that we're trying to get permits, that we're trying to wade through all of this different government red tape and all these different things. This is just one little portion of it that comes along. So if by chance the CFIA says, no, you can't do it, then we go back to non-SRM products. I mean, it's a toss-up. But if CFIA says, you know, all of this stuff in this new legislation is going to be considered as SRM, that's all great. Call it SRM, but we've got no way of disposing of it.
My name is Bob Byers. As I understand it, you've decided to move the digesters off-site and truck in the gas to the power plant. Is that not right?
Pipe in the gas. Yeah, like with a natural gas pipeline.
Okay.
That's 50 or 75 millimeters.
Wouldn't it be better or just to move the whole plant and pipe in the hot water to the users?
The viable distance to pipe hot water is only a couple of kilometers. And that's where we have the issue when we're looking at 10 or 20 kilometers away from that site for the biological portion of the plant. You can't feasibly put a 10 or 20 kilometer hot water pipeline. That distance is just economically not viable.
In Europe, there are whole communities heated by hot water from power plants.